sea to shining sea throughout the solar system and extending to interstellar regions beyond. This is the Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Here at The Kevin Smith Show, wherever you are and whoever you are welcome, and we're glad you're here. Now, we had some difficulties last night. They were not our technical difficulties. We are, on the television side, having some problems with a camera tonight. However, you should be able to hear everything, and we are going to attempt to get the camera situation rectified as soon as we take that first break. We'll work on that. But the issue last night was entirely different. It had absolutely nothing to do with us. About, something like 3 hours before showtime, the internet just, poof, vanished. No internet. And so when I called the service provider, which is a big company, they said that internet service was out in a very large region, in our entire region. And, of course, I called like within maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes of the time it went out. They said, we don't know why yet. We've got people on their way out to check it, and we'll restore service as quickly as we can. Well, I'm thinking, 3 hours till showtime, they ought to be able to get that done pretty quick. No sweat, right? At about 15 minutes before showtime, it all came back. It didn't all come back, but the internet was back on. However, the bandwidth was like at a trickle. And I was pretty sure we were not going to be able to broadcast last night. We just didn't have... just was not enough powder in the gun. And so I was pretty sure it wasn't going to happen. And so I asked our guest, I borrowed a cell phone. I called one of our members. I asked him to get in touch with the guest and so forth. And then later when I could get in touch with him, I talked to him and asked him if he could bump it over to tonight. So he is going to be with us tonight. But the internet was just out. It was dead. Nobody out here had internet. And some point during the night, the bandwidth got back up to normal bandwidth, and so we're able to broadcast tonight. I do apologize for all that, simply because I like to be with you, and I couldn't. But on the other hand... was totally out of our control. Now, I don't know what the deal is with the camera here, for those of you who are watching. During the break, we'll just shut down the television broadcast altogether and reboot that. And so you may lose us for a few seconds. However, you should be looking at a fabulous photograph of my wonderful self right there, right now. I know it's a great privilege for you. And anyway, we're on the way out of here for a break, and we'll be back right after this. We'll get it straight here in a minute. I don't know what the deal is, folks, with the camera. I actually tested it during the break, and everything was just fine, and now it's all stuck again. I don't know, but that's okay. It's a radio show. And I do think that when I switch shots, you will be able to see the pictures. Those who are watching, you'll be able to see the pictures that I'm going to use tonight. A couple of things real quick. I want to remind everybody that the show is listener-supported, 100%. Without listener support, we're not here tomorrow. And, I mean, it's just that there's no future without listener support. So your support is always critical. Whether it's a dollar, $10, $100, $20, $25, whatever, it all adds up and makes it possible for us to pay the bills. One other thing, since we obviously have a problem with a camera, I want to mention this. Sometimes we have people that say, well, I listen to this show and I listen to that show, and they don't ever have all these technical problems. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, they're not doing what we're doing either. And, you know, they can do it on their laptop. And not so here. It takes three big, powerful desktop computers to do this show. And so anyway, there's a lot of things that can go wrong. And apparently something has gone wrong with a camera. Nevertheless, we shall have a great show here tonight. Now, the last thing I want to tell you is that I did not advertise today's show. I didn't put a picture up about it. Didn't talk about it. And there's a reason for that. The reason is twofold, actually two reasons. One is the subject matter, and two is my guest. The subject matter is, as those who are watching saw at the beginning of the show, phenomenal Phobos. So we're going to be talking about one of the moons of Mars. And I've done shows on this before. I've used a couple of these photographs before, but we've got some new stuff that we're going to talk about. And so the subject matter is a little bit ticklish. You may remember all the interruptions we had when I did the show on Phobos, one of the shows on Phobos previously. My guest this evening is someone who is very controversial in his views. And he's someone that you mix him and Phobos, and it's almost certain that we would have interruptions in the show. So I just didn't advertise what was coming, and you will not know until now that my guest this evening is James Horak. James, welcome to the show.
My pleasure. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well. James, you've seen some of the pictures that I'm going to use tonight. Would you agree that it's pretty controversial stuff?
Oh, yes. We're going to set some people back on their heels.
I hope so. Well, I hear bells going off back there. That means that we are being hit. And you hear that? Hear those bells, James?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my little warning. Yeah. So maybe it's not a problem with the camera. Maybe somebody sneaked out what we're going to do here tonight. Anyway, and so now they've decided to join us and help us out. James, usually when you're here, we're talking about, you know, the sun and EMVs and, you know, big stuff like that. And this is a little bit more like our local neighborhood here. It's real close to Earth. And as a matter of fact, a new engine has been developed that NASA says it's in prototype now. NASA says they're going to use it and they'll be able to get to Mars and back in 30 days. And you know, this really is kind of right at our back door here. And Phobos, of course, being one of the moons of Mars. And you told me something about Phobos I know a lot about Phobos, and I know a lot about Mars, but you told me some things about Phobos that made me say, hey, why don't you come on the show and let's talk about that on the show? And I want to get into that.
All right.
So let's begin with, what is Phobos?
It's an artificial moon.
And how do we know that?
It's hollow. It's made of metal. It rings like a bell when it's hit by anything. And this was known by the science editor in NASA in 1969 when Walter Sullivan's book We Are Not Alone was published. He talked about Phobos and he said exactly what I just said, And, of course, this information came from NASA and other astrophysical sources. Astronomers, of course, would never talk about Phobos, or they would never talk about the moons of Jupiter, because they are muffled. And you did a show on the Office of Astronomical Telegrams that has to look over everything they discover or everything that they newly identify to determine whether it'll be released to the public. And
well, it's even more than that, to determine even if they're going to release that information to their own members.
That's right. Exactly. And it's disgusting, but it's been going on now since before World War II. And that hence the sort of antiquated name. But when people started asking questions about the chronology on Mars and the changes in the polar caps of Mars and so forth, that's when this sort of thing started developing, the secrecy. And up until then, of course, there were phenomena on the moon that were studied and records were kept and open to the public called transient lunar phenomena. And, of course, they are now classified. But transient lunar phenomena consisted of things you'd see one day or maybe even one moment and they'd be gone, like lights, like movement vehicles down in the craters, tracks.
Well, there was a bridge. I think that bridge was something like, what was it, 21 miles long or something like that, across a crater. And then the next day it was gone.
It was gone, yeah. It looked like the handle of a Easter basket. And it was extensive. And, of course, Phobos has even more remarkable phenomena attached to it. Than that, Phobos has two different kinds of depressions. It has crater impact depressions, and then it has mining pit depressions, which are very prominent because what we're talking about here is working in metal, not earth, but metal. And it's very important about to talk about that because of what the metal, the metal of importance here is with in connection with Phobos.
Well, what is that metal?
Iridium.
All right, now let me sidestep our discussion for just a moment and ask a question because I'm getting these little warning bells going off. Are you able to see the pic putting up?
Yes, I am.
Okay. All right, well, okay, so Phobos is made of iridium.
There's enough iridium there to be of high mineral value, but the most metal that Phobos is composed of is iron, manganese, iridium, and then lesser metals.
So this covering of dust this red dust we see on it, may a lot of that be oxidation then?
Yes, it is. But then you see near this one depression that is prominent that you are featuring right now, you see the iridium sheen.
Okay.
And you'll notice that on this side of the crater, it is very blunt, and on the other side of the crater, so although it's not a crater, that is a mining pit. On this side, it's very blunt, and on the other side, it's very sharp.
Yeah.
And the reason is that there's a higher concentration of iridium on this side, so it's not going to wear as much. And on the other side, of course, a lot of the iridium has been worked out.
Okay. Now, I've used that picture before. For those who are listening, if you look at Phobos, one end of it has a depression in it that makes it kind of look like the Death Star from Star Wars. And it is that's the end that we're looking at. But what we're looking at is what they don't normally show you. If you go to the internet and do a search for Phobos and then look at all the images, you will almost never see this side of Phobos. This is usually in the shadows and is located in the pictures as the underside of the crater and in the shadows. We just happen to have this picture. It's up there on the internet, and it shows what normally is in the shadows, and what that normally, what the thing that's normally in the shadows, is not covered in oxidation or dust, and it is pretty spectacular. We can see, looks like channels or canals in it, and design. Maybe it's not design, but I mean, it looks kind of like there's some designs in there. But we don't normally get to see this part of Phobos. And there is another shot of this side of Phobos. And we can see the same thing. We can see where, as you called it, iridium is shining through, and it's not covered in all that iron and dust. And so that's pretty interesting. All right, now you said it's a hollow manufactured satellite. Is that right?
That's right.
Who manufactured it, and why is it hollow?
Your ancestors.
My ancestors.
Now, they brought it with them. In fact, it was part of the moon.
Part of of Luna?
Yeah, this is the source for the building material, the metal, that they prized most, and they knew it wasn't in this system. They knew that they weren't likely to find it anywhere else, and so they brought this. Later on, when they decided to migrate to Earth, they hollowed it out and made it a Hall of Records.
How do you know that?
Let's just say that I have a way of going back.
All right, so it is a Hall of Records about what?
About your ancestors. About not just the ancestors prior to them coming here, but all of that history, and then everything subsequent, right up to the sixth extinction, because these records have been kept faithfully by machines.
By machines. Now, are these records written records, or are they holographic records, or are they got them on Blu-rays? That you can play? I mean, how are these stored?
Virtually all of the above, because this is it is a living, well, I say living, I should say organic compilation that's updated. It doesn't include this lineage. That's yet to be written. Let's hope it isn't. But that's why Phobos is protected. There have been several attempts to probe it, and to maybe even one to attack it, and it's been protected each time. I sent you some cards. Remember those cards that I sent you?
Yeah.
That were sponsored by the Astronauts Retirement Fund?
Yeah.
And in it was a card that was about a mission that they had on the drawing board in 1984. And this mission would be a manned mission to Mars, Phobos Base. And of course, the reason for Phobos being the main attraction of that mission is some of the things we're talking about now, which are known. Not everything, of course, but it's suspected, I'm sure. And of course, what's interesting is that that's about the time that, if you recall, that the that NASA started capitulating many of its ambitious plans and looking the other way and you know, boasting less and less about what it had on the drawing board. And none of these things became realized.
All right. I think it was, I just don't remember. What, 1980, 1982, something like that?
Yeah.
That the Soviets, the former Soviet Union, sent a satellite, Phobos 2, over to Mars. It successfully got into orbit, and it successfully began taking pictures and radar scans and infrared scans. And the series of pictures suddenly show a very large elliptical shadow moving across the surface of Mars. Well, obviously, whatever caused that is behind the satellite, not between the satellite and Mars, or you would have seen a picture of it instead of a shadow of it. So they turned Phobos 2 toward Phobos, the moon, to see what was causing the shadow. What happened?
You just did. Well, there was this glow like the sun, and it disappeared.
What disappeared?
The probe.
Yeah. And we have that last picture it took. All right, we have to take a break, and we'll be back right after the break. right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and our discussion of Phobos. And my guest this evening is James Horak, and he's telling us some pretty amazing things about Phobos. Phobos is, of course, one of the moons of Mars. And James, has there ever been anyone living inside Phobos?
When it was attached to the moon, as part of the moon, yes. And it was an observation station for your ancestors when they lived on Mars. And it was part of the project, or it was incorporated into the project for the geothermal energy that they sought to tap in the mantle of Mars. But like I said before, the mantle was just too thin. It wasn't what it did. It created a geophysical anomaly that caused Mars to lose precipitation and water.
All right. Now, when you say my ancestors did this, where did they come from?
It came from a system that's traveling close to the speed of light, about approximately 150 years from this system, from our solar system.
And why
it is no more.
It does not exist. Why did they leave there?
Well, this was an expedition to establish themselves about 300 light years from where their system was. I think in apprehension, I think that there was a group that it was in apprehension that what they were trying to do to become a Class 3 civilization and to control, build something like we discussed, a solar anvil.
Uh-huh.
They had a binary system, and this complicated things, and I'm not sure they appreciated that like they should have. But there was an extended community at the time that would have helped them, and they were too proud to join that extended community and receive the expertise that others who had done this sort of thing before could have given them. So they made a similar mistake here when they wanted to expand control over Mars, make it more like their home planet or planets.
So our ancestors are rebels, right?
No, they're very proud. They were very proud. I mean, we've got some of the same qualities. Where we differ basically is we have a split consciousness that they didn't have. They had unified consciousness, but they still had pride, and they didn't you find people in the extended community that don't want technology, that are pastoral, and they want to develop psychic skills and a closeness to nature that those who get into higher levels of technology lose or miss. And you see all sorts of things going on. Some of the things are very hard for one group to understand or whatever, but they all come together on accepting how important civilization is to survive.
So this was an expeditionary group of people.
Yeah. You know, they wanted to stay connected to their system. And, of course, once they were established, they would build devices that transmit matter very quickly. And they would have been able to take trips back and forth in a matter of hours.
So did they lose that technology as well, or are there pieces of that still laying around on Phobos and Mars?
Well, there are pieces of it in the halls of Mars, underneath the surface of Mars. There are pieces of it inside Phobos. But, of course, what it takes to pull it all together and make it work is safeguarded. And you would have to access both Phobos and both the Hall of Machines that Tesla could see and communicate with, and that some of the Montauk projects touched upon. You would have to have the whole, all the pieces of the puzzle to make it work, and that's a safeguard against savages acquiring star travel technology. You're not Earthbound humanity is not ready for it. I mean, look at you. I mean, you're not ready for the atomic age. You're not. You know, what are you doing with every today? You know, there's 90% of every technology, science and technology project in dollar is spent on weapons. So that's just no good.
You mentioned the halls of Mars and the hall of machines in Mars. That's pretty interesting. I know you've heard of Dr. Courtney Brown, right?
Yes. Yes, remote viewer.
Uh-huh. Well, Dr. Courtney Brown on this show talked about his group remote viewing Mars, and that under the ground, what they saw was some kind of massive, massive machinery. They saw people that look like us, all very busy working on the machinery, and apparently as if there's some kind of deadline that they have to meet. And the problem is they don't understand the machinery. They're trying to figure it out. When I ask him, is that us or are those extraterrestrials? He said, we don't know. They look like us, but we don't know.
He stepped into a timeline. And he saw what was going on during the time that the Earthbound humans were on Mars.
When was that?
You started coming to Earth about your exodus from Mars was complete about 215,000 years ago. You started about 250,000 years ago trying to do something with Earth, but Earth was very unstable. It was a lot of volcanoes, earthquakes, and so forth, and that was basically because it had no moon. And every planet that is stable, every planet that can support life, and support a lineage, a length of time for civilization to develop, requires a moon, ideally 1/6 its mass. Ideally. Of course, our moon is not ideal. And it wants to go in and come out, and it has to be kept in parity with its orbit by machines. It's set that operate on settings, and that's why their gravity fields and magnetic fields, both on Mars, I mean on the Moon and on Earth, which vary, and they vary in cycle. So I imagine that there are physicists sharp enough to have figured this out by now.
Okay, so if these are our ancestors that Courtney Brown saw, and they're the people that developed this, why didn't they know how machinery?
Why didn't they know how to what?
Run the machinery. Because that's what the problem is. He saw them working on the stuff they didn't understand.
Well, that's true, because we're talking about two peoples. We're talking about our ancestors in the Druze that were on Mars until we started moving to Earth. That helped us. Without them, we couldn't have established ourselves on Mars with the moon. Because the moon, at the time that we came into this system, we put it in orbit around Mars. And that's what started building Mars back to life. The Druze lived under the surface. They didn't care whether it was a dying planet or not, because they were getting ready to aspire to spiritual technology. And they just happened to be at a point where they could would be compassionate for people that they could help establish themselves, and That's what they did. But the machines that are below the surface of Mars in the Hollow machines are Druge. They're Druge technology, but there are ways of using them, but not to their full capacity or optional potential, because they just we're talking about a peoples that was literally millions of years ahead of our ancestors when they were at the height of their civilization.
All right, I'm going to step back over to Phobos. The next picture that I'm going to put up, and let me just go ahead. This is a monolith that's on Phobos. And now, if just me or somebody else, you know, some other show host, somebody in the UFO community had shown this picture and talked about this being a monolith on the surface of Phobos, the official responses out there, you know, from the establishment would have been, oh, it's an optical illusion. It has that appearance, but that's not really what it is. But we know that's what it is because there is someone who cut the establishment off at their knees. And the person who did that was, I believe it was Buzz Aldrin on TV, talking about the monolith on Mars. I'm thinking that was Buzz Aldrin that did that. And he was talking, yeah, it was. It was Buzz. And he was talking about there's a monolith on the moon of Mars, Phobos.
Yeah.
All right, so what we're looking at is the picture of that monolith. In the upper left-hand corner is the picture, and then to the right of it is a zoom-in of that. And then below those, someone has taken that picture and with computer technology turned it so that we're not looking down at the top of it, but we're looking at the side of it. And then on the right side is that same thing, but it is zoomed in. And it is triangular.
With the picture that's showing the curvature of Phobos, you can, using solid geometry, you can determine the dimensions of the structure of that monolith.
Well, I didn't do that. But here's what is interesting about it is the top of that monolith is basically triangular, but it doesn't come to sharp points at the corners. It rounds a corner. They are rounded corners, and it is basically triangular. Any idea what that is?
Pedestal.
A pedestal?
Yeah.
For what?
A jumping off point, like to send a load of ore or to cargo or whatever. What was on that was a device that they could transmit matter anywhere they wanted to.
In other words, a transporter.
Yeah.
Notice when we started talking about that, my alarm bell started going off about getting hit. We're still broadcasting. We'll be back right after this break, so hang in there. Don't go away, all right?
Thank you. about what to do. Tommy Anders in front of me, conducting a lazy melody. Summer soundtrack lies on a hill. I'm doing nothing till I've had my fill. Did walk these days, but rather fly. Viewing the world through my golden eye. There were recent times. There were recent times.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and our discussion of Phobos and some mysteries on Phobos. We're talking with James Horak because when I told him that I was going to be talking about Phobos, he told me some very interesting things, very interesting perspective, and he's very controversial, but if he weren't, he wouldn't be interesting for this show, would he? We're hearing from him what he knows and what he thinks about Phobos. And we were talking about this monolith that's on Phobos, and you said it's a pedestal that was used, they'd load cargo on there, and there was a device on there for transporting that, like a transporter room, teleportation, sort of. And so what happened to that technology that was on it, or is it still there?
There, most of the technology that was used by your ancestors is inside of Phobos. And the important thing about what's inside of Phobos are the records. I mean, knowledge is there. It is there not just, if you don't succeed, if you don't survive this lineage, it'll be there for someone else. Because E.T. or E.T.s are interested in history and archaeology the same way we are. And they have been the source of causing confusion on planets before because they... And they get together an expedition, they go out and they find something, and they leave things that don't fit the archaeological record. And when they're found, they breed a lot of confusion. They had a museum, for instance, in Central America, had these little terracotta statues. This thing dates back thousands and thousands of years, and there are statues of surgeons, astronauts, Cobra helicopters, thousands and thousands of different cultural elements that, of course, are only contemporaneous with their present time.
Is anybody living on Phobos now?
No, no. Now, there are people that that are there from time to time, but they don't go inside. They work. They take some of the mineral.
And who are they, and where are they from?
They're ETs, and they're from different places. The remember when I was telling you about the operation to make the metal for the internal structure, possibly of a planet or whatever. That these were people that were being helped. Some of them were from moons of Jupiter, and they were building a structure. They were incorporating the matter that it is in the remains of a planet that exploded, that is now
talking about the asteroid belt?
Asteroid belt, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're incorporating that, and that will improve the chances that you're safe from meteors and asteroids coming through, because there'll be fewer and fewer until they've taken all that matter, and because it's the source of most everything that comes near Earth or
all right,
other planets.
I want to get back to Phobos for a minute. I'm going to put a picture up. It's a black and white picture. And again, go to the internet, do a search for Phobos, pull up the images, you will find this. And I dare say that those who are watching see absolutely nothing of interest in this photograph. We're seeing Phobos, just the curvature of Phobos, so it's coming across the picture at an angle. And we're seeing some craters here, and it's just a black and white picture of a cratered up looking place. I would bet nobody sees anything of interest here. So what I'm going to do now is take that picture and change the contrast. That's all I'm doing right now. I'm just going to brighten up everything, and now maybe you see something of interest. Do you? I'm going back to the first picture, and now the picture with the contrast adjusted. Look at the crater that's almost in the middle of your screen. Do you see some things in that crater? Well, let's take a journey into that crater. And what we see is what looks like a crater. It's not very deep. The reason I say that is we can slightly sort of see some things on the floor of that crater. But on the left side, we see an extension that I would say looks geological till you get to the end of it. And the right end of it is rectangular. On the right side of that crater, we see something that looks very definitely built. I don't know what it is, but it looks built. Now, I'm going to back out here, and I'm going to go back. This is let me go to the one where I have not adjusted anything. Okay, so we're back to the picture that does not have the contrast adjusted. And what we're going to do now is sweep over to the lower, the big crater right in the middle of your screen, and we're just going to zoom in now to an area that is diagonally down and to the right of it. And here we go. At this point, we see something kind of dark, kind of cylindrical, sticking up. And I can see that it has sort of a bullet shape on the top end of it. I can also see that it's on a platform that's stepped. Can you see that, folks? Well, if you can't, let's adjust now the contrast. And now you can see it. It looks like a rocket on a launch pad that's three tiers high. To me, that's what it looks like. So, James, let me get you to comment on that. What does that look like to you?
Well, you're looking at artificial structures. This is recent. I would say within the last 1,000 years. And most of the ruins that you see down in those caverns are ruins. But this is, I would say that that is a tower rather than a rocket. And but it specialized for some kind of use, probably has to do with energy. Now, the rectangle that you see on the other side, that's recent too. It's too sharp. If you don't see
that's okay. Just keep going, James. Every time they ring the bell, we must be hitting the target here.
If you don't see signs of oxidation from, it doesn't have to be especially the material of the object that's oxidizing, but the residue from oxidation that's going on from the iron. If you don't see that, then so there's some activity going on, and this dark object is probably in use.
By whom?
I would say a mining operation that is after an alloy that they almost find readily made on Phobos, since Phobos is made of it. And it's very useful in a number of things. You can build ships with it. You can craft. If you know how, with this particular metal, you can ionize it so that it produces a field. It'll protect everyone inside the craft. No matter what the craft does, it'll have an environment that you adjust to the best, most favorable conditions for you, no matter what the craft does. And that could be a source of energy for the operation right there.
Okay. All right. Can you see the step formation on the right side of this thing?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're looking at the power station for a mining operation.
All right. Hey, we have to take a break. We have to take a break. And they just turned my camera back on. How about that, folks? We'll be back right after this break.
Once upon a time, I was right around like a songbird that's prized, but it never made a sound. Someone told me not to come, they told me not to look, but you know I never take advice, and one time is all it took. I thought, hey,
welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This has gotten to be comical. For those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're delighted to have you. And my sincere sympathies to you for whatever kept you from the first hour. We are talking about Phobos, a moon of Mars, and we're getting information from James Horak this evening. Controversial in nature for sure, but then again, if it wasn't, it would be boring, wouldn't it? What's comical here is that we are getting outside help, and if you're watching our TV channel, you're getting a freeze frame. It's just showing me sitting there, and it's a still picture. I didn't do that. We're getting outside help. Every time they hit us, my little monitor system rings a bell. And I started using that because people would say, yeah, right. You just got some kind of technical issues with your equipment. No, I don't. We're getting hit. But they were hitting us pretty hard, James, right before we went to break. It was ringing a bunch, and I started talking about them. In their nervousness, they hit the wrong button, and my camera came on. And we had a few seconds where you could see me actually moving and talking. But everything else about the broadcast is working. And so if you're watching the TV channel, you are getting to see the pictures we're talking about. So let me say this, ladies and gentlemen, we'd love for you to join the conversation. And the way to do that is to give us a call if you have any questions or comments or observations you'd like to make. Give us a call at 623-444-5889. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can call that number. It will work, but we do understand it can be a bit expensive to make international long-distance calls. And so for you, we have another option, and that is go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, click the link that says Flash Message. Now, it's located right above the picture about the show, but I don't think you're seeing a picture about tonight's show because I did not want to advertise what... there's a picture there, but it'll be last night's show. And I didn't want to advertise what we were doing here tonight. But they found out, and they're hitting us anyway. So... but we're getting through the show. We are getting through the show. So, James, we were talking about this structure. For those who are just joining us, let me put the picture back up here. This is Phobos, and you don't see anything there. However, now, when I look at pictures like this, I do see things. And but most people would not see anything there. So when I lighten the contrast or change the contrast, the crater right in the middle of your screen, we can see there are some kind of objects on the left side and the right side of that crater or that hole in the ground there. And when I zoomed in on it, we can see that there is some sort of a rectangle on the right side, or some sort of a structure there on the right side. On the left side, it looks like an extension of land or something coming out into the crater with a rectangle on the right side, right end of that. But I'll tell you something else it looks like. It looks like that could be some kind of machinery that's putting out a cloud of steam are putting out a cloud of dust, and that cloud is extending up above it and toward the left. So what do you think about that, James?
Well, there could be some activity there, but basically there are ruins in there. Anytime that you see that mouth shape, that suggests either a spaceport or an operation of some sort. Because no crater is going to have a mouth shape like that anywhere. It's going to have circular shape. It may decline, may spiral down, have a blowout area, but it's going to be circular. So anytime that you see that, and bear in mind that what you're looking at is made of metal. It's not earth. It's not rock. It's metal.
All right. Now, again, for those who joined us at after that break, I'm now back on the original photograph. Hasn't had any. I haven't adjusted contrast at all on this. And now I'm going to zoom in to an area that's angled down and to the right of that crater. And we can see there's some sort of, I said the thing looks like a rocket on a launch pad. And now I'll change the contrast for you to see why I say that. James said he thinks it's more of a tower and not a rocket. And it may have something to do with the power generation for whatever was going on, I believe you said, in that crater. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe it's similar in aspect to a Tesla technology, in that it draws static electricity and mixes it within a magnetic field so that it becomes controllable.
You must have hit the target again. Could you hear the bells?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, guys. We appreciate it. Whoever you are and for whomever you work, thank you very much. We appreciate it. It's just like putting yellow highlighter over what we're doing and saying, this is important, but don't pay attention to it. So I appreciate that. All right. 623-444-5889 is the number, and we're ready, willing, and able to take your calls. Also, remember, if you're outside of the United States or you're outside of Canada, then you can either call us or you can use our flash message option on site. James, is Phobos going to go operational again at any point in the future, so far as you know?
Well, a lot of that depends on how things go here on Earth. And I would like nothing better than to see the civilization here thrive and eventually become incorporated into the extended community. But you have to get over the hump. You have to show that your split consciousness doesn't contain an incipient innateness for savagery. And you haven't shown that yet. I have demonstrated to E.T. that you have qualities and characteristics that are to be esteemed highly, and or else this would all be over. Would have been all over after World War II.
All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hi, Brent.
Nice static image, by the way.
Oh, you like that, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, no hat.
Hello, Brent.
Hi, James. How you doing?
All right.
Now,
Brent's one of my favorite people.
A little bit. To when they brought our ancestors originally came to this system.
Uh-huh.
From what you've been describing it, it sounds to me like they brought several small, I'll say large moons or small planets of minerals into this system so they could work with them.
Well, the Phobos actually was the core of your moon.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
everything was built around that because it possesses the mineral that the everything made of metal, and this is this metal has never grown obsolete. It can develop and be utilized in different ways by cultures that have greater, more advanced technologies and so forth, but the basic idea of what's behind this metal is that it can be, it can assume almost a life of its own. In other words, it can be ionized and produced to produce a field, and that field can be useful in many ways. Imagine being able to have a piece of metal that's a computer, on the, just by virtue of the properties of that metal.
Yeah, I can imagine it. It's not too hard. But the reason I brought that up is because the way it looks. I'm looking at this picture right now. It's got the mining pit or the on Phobos. But if Phobos is hollow, why would they mine it?
Just for the mineral, of course.
The raw materials with
Phobos has a vast density.
What?
And if it ever crashed into Mars, it would be terrible.
Yeah.
You would lose all the artifacts, all of the history, what's in the hull of machines. There are marvelous things on Mars to discover. And there are things on the surface of Mars that you are not allowed to see that are spectacular. Mars is a beautiful planet. And Mars can be geoengineered into being, to having as much life and to be able to sustain as much life as Earth.
With one of the, I'll say it's a dream because I don't know, but one of the dreams I had a few nights ago, I'd agree with you.
Well, Mars could be stabilized very easily, far more easily than Earth, if there weren't operations going on Earth right now to hold it together. It would have come apart.
Mm-hmm. I believe you. I just wondering how the moon and the moon of Phobos and our moon got here. Were they brought here specifically so they could mine and restructure them, or were they brought here fully assembled?
They were pretty much as you see. Of course, there's some mineral missing. There's cavities in the moon that are vaster than they ever were before. There have been modifications, of course, over time, but pretty much as you see. And they were the home away from home for your ancestors when they left their own system to colonize another system 300 light years away.
So actually,
a little more than that.
Are their original spaceships?
Yeah, the moon, and there were they had craft too, when you're talking about 1.5 million people or more, you can't make a trek like that with all the makings of a culture ready made that they needed, that they knew they needed, into the vast unknown without having a base of operations that has everything that you need and or you're used to, that your technology is developed around, once you get to where you want to settle. And of course, if they had come across other civilizations, they wouldn't have gone there, because you do not after you acquire a certain level of technology, you were approached by an extended community of some sort, and the laws are laid down for you. I mean, once you begin exploring outside of your system, this is true and has been true for millions of years. Mm-hmm. And everything is civilized. The ETs that you see in the sky, they're part of a very civilized, very law-abiding, non-aberrant collective. And they're just things that are not tolerated. And colonizing other people's worlds is just not allowed. under any circumstance.
They will not allow co-opting.
No, no. It's just not allowed. It's no aggressive act against sentient life is tolerated. It's just not tolerated now. You can protect sentient life, but when they become self-destructive, it's understood that you stop protecting them and you let whatever's going to happen happen. Now you there has been some degree of protection here. You had already have started World War III twice. There hadn't been, you would already have had problems far worse than you have experienced. You would have already watched these people that are...
You guys are talking on top of each other.
Sorry. Go ahead, James.
You would have already seen the powers that be commit to some programs that are absolutely insane, like carving up the continent of North America.
Yeah. Now, here's my other question for you. I have heard it said that E.T. will not let us detonate too many more nuclear weapons, will not let us have a thermonuclear war, not so much to protect us as to protect them.
They won't let you use your ultimate weapon, neutron bomb.
Okay.
They know that, and they have the ability to rectify the damage from a hydrogen bomb. But a neutron bomb has far more complicated ramifications. And you, I don't know how many people, how many different concerns have neutron bombs on this planet, but I know that the United States has had a neutron bomb since the mid-70s.
Mm-hmm.
And that could have brought an end right there. And the important thing is that there are a number of people that are scientists and technicians that see where this is going. And a number of them have been killed, whistleblowers and people that were working on the inside for change. Nonviolent people. Not the kind of people that would go out in the streets to kill others. Never. Conscionable people are not terrorists. Now they're going to try to sell you that any dissenter is a terrorist. They're going to try to mind warp the youth. It's not going to take.
Yeah.
I would almost bet you that the distrust of what they're doing right now is so significant that they're going to be stymied when they try to implement what they have planned.
I hope you're right.
I do too. I don't know that I'm right, but I hope I'm right. I'm going to be hopeful. I'm not going to be a doomsayer ever, and I don't like doomsayers. And the woods are full of them, aren't they?
Oh yeah. Just too many people want to create too much stress for everybody else, so they start saying doom and gloom. This is going to happen. That's bad, and this is good, and all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, the important thing is that that if you buy into that, you add to the belief of it, and you liken the possibility for it. It may be so incremental that you wouldn't even calibrate it, but nonetheless, you know, that's counterproductive.
All right, Brent, we have to run along, but thank you very much for the call. Interesting questions and comments. 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. Phobos, you know, we talk a lot about Mars, but Phobos is a big, big story as well. You know, an interesting thing about trying to go to Phobos, we talked about the Phobos 2, Phobos 1, satellite. They lost it. They know it headed to Mars and then it vanished. Phobos 2 got to Mars, got into orbit, and then was basically shot out of space by something that it photographed right next to this moon, Phobos. I think it was last year, Russia was sending another probe to Phobos called the Phobos Grunt mission. Now, one of the things it had on board was a little container, the size and shape, roughly the size and the shape of a hockey puck. And it was full of some kind of microbes. And they were going to send that over and land it on Phobos. Well, you know what happened to that thing? It took off. And it got into orbit around Earth. Everything was working just fine. No problem whatsoever. And then at the moment that it was supposed to fire its engines to head towards Mars, leave Earth orbit and head towards Mars, its communication system just said, nope, not going to do it. And the thing is, the communication system was working. They were able to, and that's the system that had fired everything that it was supposed to do right up to that point. And they were able to establish communication with it, and they'd give it an order, and it just said no. And so, eventually, that satellite crashed back down to Earth. What's the story with the mishaps on trying to go to Phobos? Who is causing that?
Well, Phobos is protected.
By?
It's protected both by ET and the EMVs. The EMVs are responsible for getting rid of the threat from probes and from satellites that, you know, are pre-exploratory. Anything that might tamper with Phobos is not going to be allowed.
Okay, but on your screen right now, you're looking at a very clear picture of Phobos by a satellite that did not get shot down.
Well, they will put up with certain amount of observation. It's just like ET wants to display themselves and making even more spectacular displays monthly. And, and every night there are displays of ET craft to try to inspire the people here to realize there's something better. That there is all kinds of potential out there to realize that you haven't, in the hopes that you will figure out that change is a good thing.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back right after this break, and the telephone lines will be open. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and our discussion of Phobos and the information and insights, thoughts, comments, etc. from James Horak about Phobos. James, I checked the flash messages during that break, and we have a flash message here from Timothy in the UK. Are you still with us, James?
Yes.
Okay. Timothy says, you said you have ways of going back when Kevin asked how you know all of this about Phobos. Can you explain what you mean by that?
I was trying to be subtle.
Don't be subtle. This is the Kevin Smith Show.
I have access to anything I want. Knowledge of anything I want.
How
all
so?
All I have to do is access it.
How?
Because I am connected with the EMVs. And aboard the EMVs are spiritual life that have experienced everything that has happened over eons of time.
So you
and all this is shared.
So you have not been to Phobos, but you have talked to this spiritual life who have been to Phobos, is that right?
Well, in a different form, I've been there. Yeah.
Explain that. Don't be mysterious.
Well, it's been during the Civil War, there was a gentleman who had kind of like Tesla, and he had spectacular qualities, and so I showed him how to connect with ETs, and it was required that I go with him to Phobos and show him what he had been able to connect with genetic knowledge and the collective consciousness I talk about, because he had unified consciousness and had done a great deal with it. Jules Verne writes about him in his novels. Of course, it's fiction. But
well, is it fiction or is it reality presented as fiction?
Well, what Jules Verne writes about, because Jules Verne had met him. But he's creating them in the figure of Captain Nemo. But he actually existed, and he was similar to Tesla. Both of them. This is why I say the book's not closed on split consciousness. Under stress, who knows what can happen? It has more potential in my estimation, has more potential in unified consciousness, because it has more variables. And that's what the universe is all about. So, but no, I've been to Phobos. I've been to the Hall of Records. I've been to the Hall of Machines, and I know that when Tesla was talking about his accessing the Hall of Machines, that he had, because he had a way of integrating himself with ball lightning, which can be useful as a portal.
All right, so tell us about Tesla knowing about the Hall of Machines, and tell us about that. I think that's
he wrote about it. I mean, it's not just conjecture about that. He created ball lightning, and he found that he could communicate with it. And of course, he wasn't communicating with the phenomena; he was communicating with the energy that could be directed through it. And of course, the machines clicked on to him. And he communicated directly with them. The people at Montauk knew there was something to this. and they built this chair. And this chair, one, this Preston Nichols had an ability. He had a psychic concentration, and so he accessed the whole of machines the same way. Someone leaked information about this very early on. The reason I say that is that there was a movie about the Hall of Machines. Of course, it didn't specify Mars, but it also had in it the chair. It had the id monster that was created that tore the place up at Montauk. It had that in the movie. It was called Forbidden Planet. And if you ever watch Forbidden Planet that was made in the 50s, you'll say, what the hell is going on? If you know about anything about the claims of Bielek and his group, and you know anything about Tesla, it'll blow you over.
I actually have that movie on thumb drive, and I watch it every once in a while. It's a pretty good movie.
Yeah.
It's old.
Well, it has
it's
Frederick
old.
March in it, and I've always liked Frederick March.
Yeah, it's an old movie.
Yeah.
But it's a very, very good movie. All right, so what's the importance of Phobos? It's being protected, so obviously the EMVs and the ETs think it's important. It's being targeted as a place to go for Earth people to explore. Russia targeted it at least three times and has not been successful. Got pretty close with Phobos 2 and then got wiped out. There's talk at NASA about exploring Phobos. What's the from the Earth side, why Phobos?
Well, it's your heritage.
Why? Well, okay.
Nothing would please me and ET and most everyone else more than to be able to see you guys get over the hump and establish formal relations with groups of ETs and reach a point where you could be trusted to not be self-destructive and be introduced to Phobos and everything with respect to it, the technology, the mineral, everything, because it's your heritage. Restoring you to your proper heritage, that'd be a wonderful thing.
How did we lose it?
You lost it because when you migrated to Earth, you didn't make all the settings in the machines that control the orbit of the moon around Earth right, and those changes caused a varying gravity wave, and that and other environmental factors tended to cause a form of hysteria. And for some reason, nobody really knows, it's never been studied under a microscope, you developed a split consciousness. And that has been counterproductive for your survival and for your evolutionary growth, culturally, I'm speaking. And it has allowed you to have an elite, a narcissistic elite, that has established itself. And the pattern that they take in exercising power over one lineage after another is destructive and inevitably leads to extinction.
So why is it that we cannot have that heritage revealed to us right now?
There are all sorts of things right now in Romania. That issue still up in the air. But there is a site there where you have a hall of records that would The elite are so far gone that this information doesn't affect them. They'll keep on plowing, they'll go down with the ship as long as they feel like they haven't lost their power over others. And they'll hide the truth, because all these halls of record are set up by an extinction towards its end, a people's toward the end of their extinction that wanted to leave a record of what happened to them. They're the professionals, they're scientists and technicians that can see it coming, that group together and leave this out of a sense of duty. Because by that time, they've already figured out there were farmer extinctions, and they want to put an end to the cycle, a constructive end to the cycle. You retain the preservation, the instinct for the preservation of the species, even when you're insane.
Okay, so how, in our current state, how will this Hall of Records to us be destructive to us?
It wouldn't be destructive to you. It would be it's threatening to the powers that be.
Well, then why don't they open it and let the powers that be fall?
Well, the powers that be get control of it. That's just the thing. They have suppressed every record, every historical find that is threatening to them. Even the history of Tutankhamun's dynasty, which would have been in the sealed tomb when it was discovered by Howard Carter, is suppressed. The truth about the Etruscans.
Well, I'll tell you something that has been suppressed about Tutankhamun. And that whole dynasty that he was the last of, their DNA has, what they found in their DNA has been pretty much suppressed, because it was something like 90% or 95% Northern European.
Yeah.
And
we're talking about a dynasty that replaced the pharaonic line before them. And the Cleopatra was the Ptolemaic dynasty, which was founded by Ptolemy, who was a general of Alexander's.
Right.
He was an Egyptian. After Alexander died, all the lands that were conquered were divided up among the generals, and Ptolemy took Egypt.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's a great mystery about the lineage from which Tutankhamun comes. There doesn't seem to be any information about the first of them having arrived from Europe.
There is. Of course,
I'll tell you what, hang on to that thought. We have a break coming up here, and I'll let you address that on the other side of the break. And we have a flash message from Paul in Australia as well. All right, folks, we're going to step away for a break. We'll be back right after this.
spent trillions on defense. Is there a reason behind this? Is there any thought at all? Turn all your hate to love and kindness. If we divide, we surely fall. Yeah.
Right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we're on Final Approach here. My guest is James Horak, and James, we do have a flash message. I'm going to let you finish what you had started, but we do have a flash message to get to, and let me say this. We also got a flash message from somebody in the U.S. Won't work, okay? I just get a notice that we had a flash message from USA, and it automatically deletes it. I don't even get to read it. That's why we have telephones for USA and Canada especially. All right? But we do have one from Australia. That works. James, finish what you had started.
There would be a record of the beginning of that dynasty among the Etruscan records.
Okay. All right. Flash message from Australia from Paul. By the way, I didn't say it, but Timothy from the UK, thank you very much for your flash message. And Paul, thank you for yours. Paul from Australia says, good story, mate, but I have one eyebrow raised. Mr. Horak, how would it be possible for one to corroborate your story?
I think corroboration of anything like this comes about on whether when you weigh the information, it makes sense to you. It answers questions which reflect on an anomaly that no one else will deal with. And you put it in perspective over time. It's just like with a number of things that are leaked that are debunked or whatever, and you find out later on, in retrospect, that they were the real thing. They were the real McCoy. That's what I hope for, because if I didn't, beings that I'm not subject to prove anything. I don't respect the fact that proof is a word that shouldn't even be applied on Earth.
Okay, so let me play the devil's advocate for Paul and ask this question, and I think this would be a follow-up question that perhaps Paul would ask. So then, how is it possible in my lifetime to know whether you are spot on or whether you are half a bubble off?
Well, it's not possible for you to know. It's not possible for now if you could get my military records, if you could follow me, if I could get anybody to go with me to Utah, back when I was available to do that, which I tried, if a number of things might be different. But of course, then I have you and me now in the same boat. And when people are incredulous, there is no such thing as proof if it's out of their comfort zone.
Okay. So it doesn't make you, it doesn't affect you if someone says, oh, well, Horak tells a good story, but I think he's nuts.
No, no. I'm not here to convince you of anything. I'm here to give you something to think about. Now, if it gels, it gels. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But let me say this. I'll never tell you anything that is going to improve my situation financially. I'm never going to tell you something that won't prove out in the long run. I'll never tell you anything that's a lie.
Is it possible, this is another follow-up for Paul, is it possible that what you're telling us is not a lie, but sort of a figment of your imagination that has become real to you?
That's a good question. And there are a lot of people in the alternative media that I would apply that to, that very thing to.
Mm-hmm.
But bear in mind this. I've given information and been the first to do so about a number of things that no one else has given, long before they even realized it. Like, for instance, when I said that the EMVs would show up in the sun. I said this back before even Dr. Bergman knew.
And have they done so?
EMVs in the sun?
Mm-hmm.
Every day.
Okay. Well, when do you suspect we're going to get a shot at seeing what's in the Hall of Records on Phobos?
The likelihood is that you never will. It is a... There is a chance that you will overcome this tyrannical iron fist and iron boot that's trying to put itself on your head. There's a chance you'll overcome it, and you'll get over the hump. And I would say within a few years, if you did.
So we're at a make it or break it point in the history of our species.
I think everybody that's thought about it long and hard understands that's true. I think it is an instinctual acknowledgement.
And so
I see it going on more and more.
What has to happen for us to get over the hump here?
Change. You need an egalitarian society and do away with the mechanisms that keep it from being, that threaten to just eat itself up, like stock markets and international banking, war. War is an industry. I mean, who in their right mind would use eternal war as a mechanism for achieving power and admit it globally?
Well, looks like we've got another psycho with in a place of power who is about to ignite one. And when I say another psycho, I mean it's not just limited to North Korea.
No, there's
psychos pretty much scattered around the globe. But looks like one of them is hell-bent for leather to ignite a war now.
Well, that's a deflection. I mean, after all, no matter what North Korea's intentions may be, and I don't think we can fathom them any more than we can China's.
You got about 30
whatever
seconds.
Whatever their intentions may be, they don't have the resources to have what they claim.
Well, unless nations not particularly friendly to us or other Western nations, not unless they gave them to them.
Well, that wouldn't be any more threatening to humanity as a whole than what we've done with Israel, doing that for Israel.
And on that note, we have to say goodbye because we are out of time. Thanks for being with us. If you will, stay on the line with me for a moment. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's been an interesting show. Very controversial information, as I told you it would be. And, some people can wrap their minds around it and they would say, yeah, I think the guy is right. Other people cannot wrap their minds around it and they think, I think he's nuts. That's the way it is every time James Horak is on anybody's show. It's always very controversial. And you just have to make up your own mind. I don't make your mind up for you. And I don't promote yes or no, left or right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for this evening. Thank you for being here with me. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You may call me whatever you wish to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.